Can you call her upstairs, Emma?
No.
No. No, thank you. Hello, and welcome to the second episode in our mini-series, Going Virtual with the Notorious Pedagogues.
So I think the reason why this needs to be the first episode in this mini-series is once we got the initial news that this is where we were going, we also realized that the students were getting the same information and that they needed help in processing what that meant, not just for them academically, but what that meant for them socially, what that meant for them with housing, food, transportation, etc. So I think it's really important for us to focus this episode and our reflections on taking care of our students and what that means and what that looks like.
Yes, and I think that, you know, I mean, one, we were on spring break when this news hit. So we are operating under the assumption that because we check our email during the break, that everyone, faculty and students, are checking their email during the break, which may or may not be the case. I mean, there still might be another wave of panic that's about to hit within the next couple of days.
So there may even be a second wave of, oh my goodness, what is going on, when our students largely come back online on Monday, the official first day after spring break, but is now the beginning of a sort of two-week gray area period where we have the space to really be thoughtful about moving our pedagogy and our teaching online. That's what you were getting at?
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. And I think that the initial information, although lengthy, still left students with a lot of questions. So then you saw like the union president saying, well, here, let's ask faculty questions here, and then let's ask student questions here. And then I think, you know, I mean, social media, if you saw any of that, you know, students were asking questions, well, what about my stuff? It's still in the dorms. And what about, you know, we paid for rent in an off-campus apartment, or, you know, I'm not going to continue to pay rent when I can't, when I'm not physically going to the classes in Westchester and I live 2 hours away. So I think that, you know, there was that panic, and we, because we are co-advisors of the NCTE student affiliate, we have a group text, and it just occurred to me, like, why don't, like, I at least know that they'll get that text, right? They may not be checking email, but, like, let's just check in on them.
And I'm glad you did bring that up, because you drafted that message for them, which then had me look at, well, wait a minute, even though it is spring break and my students might not be checking their emails, I had been getting some text messages from graduate students who were, you know, worried and concerned about what was happening. That inspired me to stop, take a minute, draft a thoughtful message that I was able to write, like almost like a template, but then adapt and adjust for each one of my classes to send out and share with them, saying, here's what I know immediately, here's what I don't know, and here's when I will know, and I will let you know when I have more details.
Yeah, and I don't think that, I mean, I do want to, like, I initiated that text, but I think it was probably because I was on Twitter and I saw a few people who I follow, specifically Jesse Stommel, who is at Jessifer on Twitter. And here's his message. My school just pivoted to online. Here's the message I sent to students. I'm here to support you however I can. Take care of yourself and your family first. Our class should not be your priority. Everything about this class is flexible. Whatever happens, we will work it out. And that was like an aha moment for me in thinking, okay, I have my student teachers, I have my graduate students through the writing project, and we have our class that we co-teach together. And then our officers who we advise, right, for that student organization. And I thought, I might be freaking out, but I need to pause that, and I need to assure these undergraduate students. I mean, nothing like this ever happened when I was an undergrad or in grad school. I mean, not the same, but as far as like something sort of impacting the entire country, 9/11 happened when I was teaching. But then I think once the school district figured out that our school was safe, then things really went back to a normal instructional schedule, right? I mean, schools weren't ordered closed in New York State, you know, maybe in the city, but not in the state as a whole. So we really just resumed as, you know, quote unquote, normal as we could in those days following September 11th. So I tried to quickly bring up anything near to that, and I just wanted to reassure them, you know, particularly student teachers. I mean, student teaching is already such a stressful time in a student's life, and to add this to it, and, you know, I just wanted to provide some comfort to them, you know, that we'll figure this out. Like, people are working on it, you know, that I've already been, you know, texting you, texting Dr. Laura Renzi, who's the chair of the secondary ed department, you know, what do we do about student teachers, that sort of thing. And to just reassure them that, like, your faculty are here for you. It's break, right? But your faculty are here. We care about you. That's the priority, like helping you. And we're all going to get through this.
The other reason why, and this, I think we're all kind of forgetting this as well, the reason we have 2 weeks after spring break before we're supposed to start our teaching again is we are right smack dab in the middle of enrollment for summer classes and for the fall. So not only, I mean, we've mentioned advising like our advisees, like our student affiliate and whatnot, but or graduate students, but also our undergraduate students who will be signing up for fall classes and for classes over the summer. This is the time when they need to be coming to our office to get questions answered. Right. I've already had, gosh, it's Saturday, and I've probably got 4 or 5 emails from advisees who are supposed to enroll this upcoming week and are, have real questions about what do I do. And on top of us all moving our classes online, we have to address those questions and concerns. Like, I have a student who needs to get into a class, but it's not part of my department, so I have to ask who can help this student in that other department, but that I know that other department is also struggling to support their faculty members. So That's the other reason why we've got this period of time. I know a lot of us as faculty members were like, well, wait a minute, if we feel comfortable moving online more quickly than the 2 week period, can we just go ahead and get started? And administration and some of our other colleagues were like, no, we need to slow down and do this correctly.
Yeah.
And this is one of those reasons why we need the space to help and transition for students. It's going to take a little while for, like you said, how do we deal with the housing? You know, how do I get my stuff? How do I get to wherever I'm going to be next and ensure that I have the access I need technologically to
to
get to these classes? I wonder what you think about. I have some mixed emotions about this. I think it is worthwhile to ask and inquire to students about what access to technology they have, what their schedules are going to be like, and what they're how they're planning on thinking this through for the next rest of the term. What I am concerned about is it seems like I've seen some of our colleagues who want to do surveys about what students want in regards to their virtual instruction or the virtual space, which I think is initially a really good idea, but then on the backside of things, it kind of relinquishes some of our expertise as faculty members. And I'm thinking not just with other undergraduates, but also with like my graduate students and my doctoral students. Am I making sense? What are your thoughts on polling, to be crude, polling students about what they want or what they need? Because there is still, we do have expertise in our areas, and we know that there are certain ways to do things that are better than others. So how do we balance that, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
I think for that, if the focus is on accessibility and equity, then we're okay. But I think saying, what do you want? I think that's Pandora's box.
That's a challenge, right?
Yeah, because then what if they say, well, I didn't want to do a podcast episode anyway. So can you take that off the syllabus?
Yeah, and it's like, that's not okay.
No. It's not acceptable. You know? Well, and then it makes us look like we're not being as flexible maybe as someone else.
Exactly. And there's something there are parts of our domain and our discipline and our work that we know from having gone down the road before, we understand some things that our students don't. And right. some things need to happen in a certain order, and they need to happen in a certain context. It doesn't make sense to teach about something by recording a lecture rather than getting in a room, even though it may be through a computer, but getting in the room at the same time with a group of students to talk it out so they can at least see facial expressions and hear tone of voice, and you can take questions. Yeah, I'm on the fence about that because I've been seeing a lot of our colleagues say they're going to be polling and asking students what their thoughts are. And I initially thought, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I should do that too. And then I kind of stopped and paused for a second and wanted to talk it through with you, but also wanted to think about it a little bit more critically myself.
Yeah, I think.
It's a tough question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, our situation is unique because, like I mentioned, our course is already or does already have a focus on technology and using technology for educational purposes. We just never added the virtual aspect to
it. We've never pushed it that far.
We've done, you know, the face-to-face teaching, and then, you know, the students within their groups do a little bit of virtual collaboration using Google Docs and that sort of thing. But for the most part, we're a face-to-face delivery. I think, like, I'm in a unique situation also because I was supposed to be starting a cohort through the Writing Project Institute on March 26th. And at first, I was going back and forth with the dean's office to say, well, this is off-site, so what are the logistics? Can I still travel to? And then, of course, like yesterday, that came to a halt anyway because now that school is closed for 2 weeks. So I think, you know, I need to sit down with my co-director for that and think through the dates and maybe push them further into May. But basically, the directive I was given was that, you know, you're still following that Westchester policy of virtual delivery. And so thinking about something like the Writing Project Institute, which is typically immersive in nature and workshop in nature, pushing that to virtual, I just keep sort of looking at all my planning documents for that and like, okay, all right, I'm processing. I'm thinking, right? Because now how do I prepare something like that? I think at least for us, we already have some ideas because of the nature of our course, you know, and it's like tweaks and it's thinking about, you know, the TPAC aspect, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit more. But for the Institute, I think I'm kind of stumped at this point.
So one of the first things we did was we reached out to students via text messages, which is a special sort of scenario because there are students that are part of the student affiliate. So we have a different kind of relationship. They're not just mm-hmm. our students as, you know, professor, student. Right. We also send out emails to our students to assure them that everything's okay. I know some of the programs that I teach in, like the doctoral program and the master's program I teach in, those directors of those programs reached out individually via email. It's been very text-based reaching out. Mm-hmm. Should we be considering other ways to reach out and connect to students? Maybe it's recording an audio message. Maybe it's a video, a vlog. I'm thinking of how we can also, not only for our students, but model for others what may be useful.
Yeah, you're right. We have been very text-based. I mean, even with the student teachers, I texted all of them and said, you know, we're going to figure this out. Have no fear. I think if we push these episodes out and, you know, even tag them with our RH325 hashtag on Twitter, that, you know, the students who are following that hashtag will see it. Maybe even putting that as a D2L announcement, you know, here are some of the things that we were thinking about. I'm not sure. I think the video logs would be really awesome. I was thinking about, K-12 teachers who may want to record, you know, book recommendations, or even for the younger grades, like reading a picture book out loud. And if you're on social media, then like the parents would be following you on, say, on Twitter. But like maybe the parent could say like, oh, look, it's, you know, so-and-so reading a book on Twitter, and here, watch this video. Because I think, you know, a lot of kids just also love their teachers and want to see their teachers and feel safe with their teachers. So I think putting the students at the center and really thinking through what might they need right now. I mean, I think they need reassurance from us as the more experienced other, obviously, but then also just as like the grown-ups around them. I mean, even our students are technically grown-ups, but I know they look to us as role models. And so even though we did freak out, not to say that we didn't and lie to them, but to really say like, okay, don't freak out. Like, we're going to figure this out.
So I think that gets us to an interesting place of not just thinking about how we take care of our students and communicate with them, but then also how we're going to be really thinking about going virtual as professors, as advisors, and as teachers, and as colleagues. So I think the next thing we should talk about, we should focus on those tech tools. I think we should focus on the ones that are making the rounds on social media, talk about the ones we're going to be specifically using as professors, as teachers, and also what Westchester's using. And I've seen other institutions, our colleagues who are posting about this on social media, their options. So that seems like a good next focus for the third episode of this miniseries.
I agree. Thank you for listening to this second episode in our mini-series, The Notorious Pedagogues Going Virtual. In our next episode, we will focus on specific digital tools that may help you as you think through your pedagogy and think through ways of delivering content in the most effective manner.